Okay, so Matt asked me this morning when I came in if I was going to do the total prophetic update, you know, for the last 2 years. I said, didn't think I could manage that. No pressure from Matt, of course. So I'm just bringing really what I felt God say very recently. Julian often has to persuade me heavily to preach and to talk. And this was very recent. I just thought, oh, maybe I could bring this. So the story that God has been really highlighting to me recently is the parable of the treasure in the field and the pearl of great price. I'm going to try and remember to do the PowerPoint and tell Brian to move them on. So I'm just going to read. I think it might be on the next slide. That's it. Great. So it's a very short part of the Bible, two parables that Jesus tells from Matthew 13. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. And then the next one is, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. So I think these are often parables we read through and we think, yeah, I understand that pretty much straight away. Got that. And, you know, I think it really is, I don't think it's complicated, but I felt it was really helpful to hear some context. So just next slide, Brian. Firstly, the treasure story. So when someone found treasure in a field in biblical times, this was not unusual, since money was really something that was more of an exchange or used for an exchange. So it was not something we put in a bank to invest for a return, as you might do today, or you might not do today. I don't know, because banks aren't such good at the moment. But in those days, it was simply a mechanism, an exchange. So if you had an excess of money, it would be quite normal to find a safe place to keep it and to hide it. And so people often, if they had a piece of land, buried it in the land. And they actually left it there. And it was quite normal for a wealthy person to do that. So there might be silver, there might be heirlooms, there might be gold coins. And they would actually take it and bury it. But obviously, due to general life, or people were killed accidentally, or wars happened, or political upheaval, or land fell into someone else's hands, it wasn't that unusual to have treasure buried and then forgotten, because the person who buried it, for whatever reason, never came back. It makes me think of, there's a program that Ben and Catherine told us about called Detectorists. I don't know whether you've ever seen it, where these guys go around with, and they're always looking for that ultimate treasure. But anyway, in this story, Jesus talks about a laborer working in a field, and he finds maybe just a part of that treasure. And, you know, if you can imagine the detectorists as he finds this treasure, or maybe a jar with some coins in it, and he realizes somebody has buried some treasure. So we are told he hides it again, and we are told this man buys this field, and by implication, he's not a rich man. In order to buy that field, he has to liquidate everything and give away everything he has, sell everything he has. He has to say, make himself totally poor to buy that field, because he knew there was far more in the field than he was paying for the field. And it's interesting, he did it with joy. He did it with joy. So the next PowerPoint. So secondly, the second story, similar sort of theme, is about pearls. And pearls were extremely valuable in the culture of that time, possibly more so than today. So the one on the left is Cleopatra's pearl, apparently, and it was valued at 25 million denarii. And one denarii was a day's wage. There you go, Harris, a day's wage. So I'm just about to say that in today's money, probably £3 billion. That's a good expression. So Jesus talks about a pearl merchant, someone who understands what pearls are, and he sees one that is the best. It beats all of them. He knows that although he must sell everything again, he must liquidate everything, sell all that he has, that this pill is worth so much more. So everything might mean, you know, your record collection, your house, I'm trying to put it now, your dog, and pizza oven. Yes, your pizza ovens might have to go, your furniture, everything. It doesn't matter. He sells it all, and he sells it all with joy. Why? Because he knows that what he's getting is so much better than what he's giving up. And he's giving up everything to have that one pearl. So it's interesting, the two stories, both men have a moment of revelation. They see something of value that other people looking at the same thing haven't seen. They understand something of value and beauty that is there, and other people have missed it. They have an insight and a revelation to understand it. And also they understand there is no halfway to get it. There's no trying things out. This is an all or nothing. It's not like many things that we see these days. Another PowerPoint, please, Brian. So this is something I was thinking the other day, that this Emma mattress, you can have a 200-night trial. I think it's amazing. And if you don't like it, you can take it back. I always think, does anybody do that? But anyway, I was just thinking the other day that isn't what it's like with God. You don't have your 200-night trial. You're all in. You know, it's not like something we can just... These guys sold everything. They were all in. They are going to become completely poor and risk everything, lose everything, sell everything. Maybe some precious heirlooms, maybe some land, maybe some property, maybe some livestock. If they had any of these, they would be selling them. These two men are willing to do it. They're willing to go all the way to get the thing of beauty that they see, that treasure and pearl of supreme value. It's really important that we notice that once they get it, they realize that the benefits and the rewards completely outweigh the sacrifice and the cost. Though this cost everything, it pays far more than the cost. Therefore, the sacrifice is in the context of such overwhelming riches and joy that they make the sacrifice in joy. I think it's really interesting in the scripture, it says they sacrifice in joy. So it wasn't that they sacrificed and then got joy. They sacrificed in joy. And then they also, and once they received, they got joy. But they sacrificed in joy. They sacrificed in the knowledge of what was coming. They'd seen something that was so amazing, so beautiful, so wonderful. They sacrificed in joy, knowing. So sometimes I think, personally, I always think, you know, the joy set before me. I think, well, maybe I can't see it now. But that's not true. I feel these parables are saying the joy now, you can see it now, and you sacrifice in joy. So I think I've got another slide. So there seem to be three principles. I thought that was good. Teachers seem to have 3 points, don't they? That's always kind of safe zone. There were parables have 3 key principles that I just felt God was really highlighting. So some of that material I've heard from other preachers, but I felt God wanted to speak more through these parables. So the first principle is they saw the value. These guys saw the value and they gave up their small ambitions. The second principle is they made themselves totally poor and they became totally rich. And then the third is they gave everything in joy, knowing what was on the way. And recently I just felt God say to me, the church itself is a pearl of great price. And I know these parables are principally about the kingdom of heaven. I understand all that. And I'm also aware that the kingdom of heaven is greater than the church. And yet the church should and does demonstrate the kingdom of heaven. God also values, loves, and treasures and lays down his life for his church. And that I mean the local body. You know, this morning, the lion, I really found the Lion of Judah walking through his church. He loves his church. I do listen to quite a lot of preachers, and I recently heard a man speaking about after COVID, and I thought it was really profound, and he said this. He said, the greatest side effect of the COVID season isn't the loss of smell or the lingering fatigue that some have experienced, nor is it the continued decline in the economy, which was virtually paralyzed for 2 years. I think the greatest side effect of the COVID season is that many people got washed up on the shore of disillusionment and faithlessness. They stopped following the way and instead started following their own way. Consequently, churches that were once full of faithful followers are reduced now to a remnant of just passionate people. I still think that's quite a good thing, passionate people. Far too many people have exchanged the sacrifice of fellowship for the comfort of a riskless existence. For the comfort of a riskless existence, rooted in convenience and lethargic lifestyles. The fires of faith have gone out in them, quenched by the waters of distrust, bitterness, and a critical spirit. The warning is that it's easy for us to be in this place and not know it. And I found this very, it was a warning. And June and I sometimes do lift our head above the parapet, and we're aware that there are many churches that have really struggled post-COVID. People have left church. And I was just really praying about it, and I was thinking how we apply the principles from those two parables into church and what I felt God was saying. So one of the things I think is the first principle, they saw the value and gave up on small ambitions. These men, you know, actually had huge ambitions when they bought those, when they got that treasure and the pearl. And so often we come to church or look at Christianity and we recognize we need something. You know, you want friendships or relationships, a Sunday school for your children, and none of those are bad. None of those are bad things. But when you understand the gospel, when you understand that you're a sinner and you need salvation, you know, that utter salvation, we are often willing to admit we need a bit of strength or a bit of inspiration, but that is too small. The gospel says that's too small. You need to give yourself to the King of Heaven and he will make you into a completely new person. He will come in with his own nature and turn you into something incredible. So many people feel the gospel is that you admit a little bit and you try harder. You let God in a little bit and then you change a little bit. But the gospel says, no, everything has to go. You have to sell everything. It's completely radical. And I want to kind of hold the individual and the corporate here with the church and what God is saying to us. Because Jesus says the good news is what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, what no human mind has conceived, the things God has prepared for those who love him. And I was trying to think of a picture, and C.S. Lewis does this great sort of picture of it. And I want you to think about yourself, but I want to think about the church. Imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to renovate that house. At first, you understand what he's doing. You know, he's getting the drains done and he's sorting the damp patches, and that's all right. But after a while, he starts knocking the house around in a way that hurts abominably and does not seem to make sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is he's building a very different house to the one you thought he was building. You thought he was adding an extension here and there and an extra floor, but actually he's making towers. He's creating courtyards. He's pushing out walls. You thought when you first came to him, he was going to make a decent little cottage, but he's actually building a palace. He's actually building a palace. Why? Because he intends to live in it himself. You had just wanted God to visit, get you through your exams maybe, help you have a nice family house, have some good friends. You thought perhaps if you go to church that would help a little bit. But actually God is saying, I want everything. I want to turn you into a palace. I want this church, this palace. None of this renovation stuff. He is doing a whole complete conversion because it's the dwelling place. It's where he's going to live. I just feel that if you can hold those two pictures, because sometimes it has been uncomfortable recently, hasn't it? You know, I'm being really real. People have left. Jude and I have been it's incredibly painful, incredibly disappointing. But I do believe God is building the King's house into something to serve the city, to serve this county, and to serve this nation. And we need to give up on our small ambitions and recognize when lethargy has kind of slipped into our thinking, or those things that guy said originally. So that's my first principle. The second one was they made themselves totally poor to become rich. Jesus says the only way to receive the kingdom of heaven is to sell everything or effectively lay it all down. You say, and you look at him and you say, because of what you've done, because of what you've done, I want you to be my Lord. And it does require that unconditional surrender. I've been watching somebody quite close to me recently, and I love him dearly, but actually there's this point where you've just got to say, I don't understand, I'm just going to throw my whole body in to this. I have got to throw my whole self in. You can't hold anything back. You can't judge it and wait, do your bed trial, say 200 days, see if it works. That's just not the way God is. So sometimes we make that commitment, we say the prayer, and then we don't always realize what we've got ourselves into. And slowly, though we realize it really doesn't, we think, well, maybe I can hang on to those things, but Jesus starts to renovate. He starts to renovate our house. And he challenges bits of the house. Why are they still there? What's that doing there? And I was thinking, what does that mean? I think it's identity. Sometimes it's identity, you know, saying you're a Christian to your colleagues at work. Maybe how you spend your money, how you spend your time. And the other thing God said to me is, who influences your life? Who do you allow to influence your life? What films do you watch? Who are the people that speak into your life? You know, that there has to be a change when you're actually surrendering everything and you're giving it all to God, because sometimes those influences, they might be great friends, but are they good influences? Do they speak good things? There's a challenge, actually, in becoming poor to become rich, because actually it isn't always comfortable at all, and saying that this is the treasure and I will sell everything for that. You know, why do you come to church? One of the reasons, I think, and that helps me refocus on God, the beauty of what Jesus did. There are moments in worship with others when everything seems to fade. This morning, everything faded for me. I could just see him plodding down the center there, huge lion. And suddenly you see the treasure. You see the treasure, you see the pearl, and you think nothing else matters. And you recognize that Jesus is your treasure. And often in worship, I weep. And I think it's just that recognition of his value. And I just suddenly come back and think, Lord, I just love you so much. Nothing else matters. And I just remember when we first met after COVID, we met in the Gordon's garden for the first time. And we hadn't been able to sing together properly. And that moment was so sweet. It was like so sweet. And I thought, I've lost the value of this again. And when we actually sang together and Stuart led, it was so lovely. It really was like honey, something so sweet, worshipping together as a church. And so my final principle, just going back to that, the parables, these guys, they gave everything in joy, knowing what was on the way. And I really feel the last few years, COVID seemed to go on an awful lot longer. We thought it was be 3 weeks, but actually it ended up being years. It's been a real season of testing. We have been through a season where a lot of us can point to things where things have actually died, maybe in our lives, and actually we may also have actually lost people. I was listening to Brené Brown recently again, and she does an amazing TED talk on vulnerability. I highly recommend it, because I just wanted to do a sidetrack, slight tangent. Julian doesn't always let me do this, but a side tangent on on this, that we try, and she, what she says is, it's all about vulnerability, and she says we try to numb our vulnerability. And this is Christians and non-Christians alike. And we try to numb it down. We try to numb all our emotions down. And COVID has come and gone, but, you know, will you be vulnerable with some of the things you've been really hurt by? Will you completely come to the Father? Because the problem is, and what she highlights, she did a lot of research into this, is when you numb vulnerability, when you say, I won't be vulnerable, I won't be open with other people, we also numb everything else. If you can't be open with God about who you are and where you're at, you numb everything else. And we numb joy, which I thought was amazing. She said, we numb joy. And Jesus gives us the answer with this very simple parable. He says, lay it all down and look to what has come. Lay it all down in joy. We are being built up as living stones to show the world about a kingdom that they know nothing of. We have found the pearl of great price. And we, when we come together as living stones, we can change a street, we can change a town, change a city, we can change a nation. I feel God is bringing a fresh breeze. This is my prophetically bit, but I do really feel prophetically God is bringing a fresh breeze and a fresh joy on old flames, but we do need to lay the things down. And I felt God say we need to really lay those things down, to surrender. Don't numb the pain. Don't do that. Be open. Bring those things. Surrender it all. Allow that fresh breeze and joy to come. Because there is a new door opening and a new season coming. He's the pearl of great price. And the church reflects the pearl of great price. And who we have found. A pearl, a treasure beyond all treasures.